Welcome to this edition of the B-Roll, where we've gotten together for an extremely rare early week recording to pay tribute to the late, great Christopher Plummer, who passed away this past Friday at the age of 91 as a result of complications from a fall. According to his wife, he had fallen, taken a blow to the head, and like I was saying to Crash earlier, he was 91. He was walking paper. Pretty much any blow at that point is going to kill you.
Well, I had seen a quote from an interview that he had done at a handprint ceremony in 2019, and he said retirement wasn't in sight for him ever, because if he ever stopped working, he would just drop dead. And I'm just sitting there going,
well,
which, yeah, he may have been kind of right, because his most recent credit was 2019, so he may have finally actually stopped, and, well, tragically, we know the rest.
That said, he was slated to play King Lear in a film shot in Newfoundland, you know, Newfoundland King Lear.
Well, yeah, as much as we were predominantly going to be focusing on things like Star Trek VI.
I can see you, Kirk.
Jack.
Can you see me?
Star Crash. You know, like the geekier roles that we would know him for. Let's get the most obvious thing out of the way and then I want to get to a TV credit that I just found that is just damn funny to me. But he's, of course, most well known for The Sound of Music.
Edelweiss. Edelweiss. Every morning you greet me. Small and white, clean. Happy to meet me.
Oh, I thought it was Rockadoodle.
Ladies and gentlemen, the King!
Let me be your rooster, and let me roost with you.
Him!
Let me be your rooster, or let me hear your sweet voice.
Get him out of here!
See, everybody always says that, you know, Sound of Music, that's what they most know him for, but no, for me growing up, it was Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, Shakespeare, you know, you should hear Shakespeare in the original Klingon. That's what I grew up knowing him for. And then I think it wasn't until like grade 6 or 7 that I actually got to see Sound of Music. And it's like, why do I know him? Go home, ask mom. Why do I know him? Oh, remember that thing? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I got it. So that's more so the second thing. Or a third, if you count Knives Out now, that comes to mind. But, you know, as much, that'd probably be better in his mind because of his most obvious disdain of Sound of Music. What was it that he named it? Sound of Mucus, was it?
Sound of Mucus, yeah.
And oh, that's wrong. Amazing. Yeah, no, I was going to say, his relationship with that movie is almost like a milder version of Roger Moore's relationship with A View to a Kill. Like, Plummer did not like The Sound of Music, but he was also grateful for what that movie did for his career.
Oh, yeah.
Roger Moore did not like A View to a Kill. He just also, I don't think, was willing to admit he had actually done the movie.
Yeah. Every actor has a pool house.
Yeah.
It paid for the pool in the pool house. Don't worry about it.
And also with The Sound of Music, when I was looking through the Christopher Plummer trivia, there's a bit of a Christopher Lee and Lord of the Rings vibe because, like, you know, like we know the famous story about how Christopher Lee was like, no, that's not what a knife sounds like when it goes into a man. In Plummer's case, it's that he had actually met Maria Von Trapp. He had apparently met her as a child.
Random.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Like, there's a lot of that just totally random that just also absolutely works in his favor. And also, like we mentioned Rockadoodle, which just look it up because just it's just funny. But I found a TV credit that he had that is just ironic and kind of perfect for him. He did an episode of the fourth season of The Cosby Show called Shakespeare, which...
like, it's either him or Kenneth Branagh in terms of modern-day ambassadors of Shakespeare. I mean, like, you know, if you... He was the go-to for decades. That's why he was Jack.
Yeah, well, partly that, and I think what also may have been a factor there is Plummer was of course theater trained and had worked Stratford. And who wants to guess who his understudy was when he did King Lear?
Yes. Yes, I saw that wonderful.
Good old William Shatner.
Like, I'm very entertained by the fact that Shatner, who of course has a very mockable performance form, was literally his understudy and got his big break when Plummer was sick one night. It's just, you know, I almost, there's no point talking to William Shatner about anything. He's not talkable anymore. But I really would have loved to have asked Christopher Plummer about Shatner's acting style. Just be like, did he always do that? Did you tell him to do that?
Well, I think the documentary The Captains that Shatner did, that it's been a while since I've watched it because I ended up doing an essay on it. But there was one point where they did sit down and talk together about Star Trek, yes, but also their shared experience with Stratford. So I'm going to have to revisit that because it was really nice to actually kind of watch the two of them. Don't know obviously what it was like behind the camera, but yeah, it's definitely a clip to look into if one's curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because apparently Plummer heard about Shatner's performance in his role in King Lear. So that when Plummer came back, it pushed him to perform better to outdo his understudy. And then also with his work as General Chang, there's the dinner scene in Star Trek VI where toward the end of the scene, Plummer has the line as Chang, "We need breathing room." And Kirk immediately goes,
"Earth, Hitler, 1938. I beg your pardon."
And Chang looks at him with just this, "What the fuck?"
It's a double performance because Plummer also worked quite a bit with Nimoy, and it's both of their reactions. Chang knows exactly what's being said, and it goes immediately to Nimoy, who manages to do restrained exasperation, and it's just these three are perfect.
Oh yeah. No, I was watching Star Trek VI on Saturday night, like after the news broke. I got to that scene and I'm going, I'm not sure if Plummer is actually acting here.
Yeah, you almost get the feeling that, yeah, Shatner pulled that out of his ass and Plummer wasn't expecting it. And
yeah.
It so hard. I'm just like, what? Yeah. And kudos for Nimoy for either staying in character or just being like, I knew Shatner would do something.
One of the main reasons I brought up that Cosby Show appearance earlier is simply because there's probably two ways that best describe Plummer's acting resume just in general. Shakespeare or wait, what?
or Shakespearean Wait What, such as his truly iconic performance as a living tutorial mechanism in Skyrim. I love that tutorial.
Oh yeah.
like it's almost so telling.
Shakespeare and everything else.
and everything else. But yeah, it's like it's so telling that if you know, actors sometimes end up in video games for one reason or another. Saying that he reprised Chang in a few Star Trek video games, but it's so telling and apt that, you know, Canada's arguably greatest actor would end up in essentially the most successful video game of all time. It's like, any video game? No, the most successful one of all time. No dicking around.
No, and like he's just there. I don't think he's ever brought it up because I didn't even know that until today.
Yeah, he plays the leader of the Greybeards. He teaches you how to shout.
Like that?
Oh, and to bringing in a theater trained actor for that is just kind of perfect.
I mean, it's like this part has to have gravitas. Who do we have booked? Well, we've got Saul from Battlestar Galactica. That's good. Who can we do better? Christopher Plummer? Where the fuck did that come from? I mean, that said, I'm pretty damn sure Max von Sydow's in that game as well. So.
Not a good one.
No, no doubt. And also, speaking of Max von Sydow, there's also the simple fact that if you're a theater-trained actor, like a Max von Sydow or Christopher Plummer, at some point, you did a terrible 80s sci-fi movie. Because Star Crash? Mwah.
It could have been worse. It could have been worse. I spent the morning going over in my head how I would talk about Strange Brew, and then I realized I was thinking of Max von Sydow.
Wrong old white guy.
I mean, with Star Crash, you have something that is a blatant Star Wars clone. Blatant!
Which is funny because Max ended up in Star Wars later on.
Yeah. And it not only has David Hasselhoff, it has a David Hasselhoff lookalike. And then there's Christopher Plummer playing a benevolent, yet from the way he's doing it, incredibly drugged out emperor.
You know something, my boy? I wouldn't be emperor if I didn't have some powers at my command. Imperial battleship, halt the flow of time.
Because I'm sorry, that man sounds stoned the entire movie. But the best and probably one of the most baller reasons for taking a role I have ever heard, Plummer did Star Crash just for the free trip to Rome.
Good on him.
Yes!
That's smart.
That's the way to work the system.
Oh, yeah, no, that was beautiful. Also, Plummer was a guy who was very much up there with your John Rhys Davies or Anthony Hopkins, where if you need someone, if you need a narrator, you goddamn hire this man.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect narrative voice.
Oh yeah,
perfect.
Because if you grew up with the Madeline series of animated films, you grew up with Christopher Plummer, and more recently, we have to take a second to touch on All the Money in the World.
Well, you'll be happy to learn that there are some new developments. which will enable us to finally help our little Paul.
So glad to hear it.
My tax attorneys have discovered that while ransom payments are not deductible under the tax code, I could write off the interest if I loan the ransom money to my son.
Proof that this man was not only quality, he was a workhorse of quality. So the decision was made December 22nd in 2017 to replace Kevin Spacey in All the Money in the World. Now, Kevin Spacey is the main character. He's the protagonist. Yep. And so this is the kind of reshoot that would take months and months and months, and then, you know, probably a lot of editing work to get around it. It would just be a nightmare. He managed in roughly 3 weeks to completely refilm the entire movie, and then he earned a Golden Globe, a BAFTA, and an Academy Award nomination for his performance. Fuck.
I mean, like on the one hand, yes, he had seen the script like well beforehand.
Oh yeah, he was.
He
already had this character down, and they essentially just expanded the character into a main character. But what the fuck?
Yeah,
that should have been an immediate ground for failure. That it succeeded wildly is possibly his greatest legacy as a performer. Just damn. And that's not counting how he almost stole the show in Knives Out, which is just an ongoing 2.5 hour long fight between people trying to steal the show.
Pay attention now. Your mom is still undocumented, and if this is your fault, she'll be found out and at best deported, and your family will be broken. But we're not going to let that happen, are we, huh? But you have to do exactly what I tell you. Will you do this, Arthur? Hmm?
He doesn't appear after the first 20 minutes.
Like, he's not only 20 minutes before he shows, he's barely in the movie, really.
He's sitting on a couch for like 90% of his performance.
Yeah.
But he still created he left such an impression as well. Not just because of how the other characters interacted with him or whatever have you, but just those moments where he was on screen, he was the center of attention. Like, not just because it was Christopher Plummer that your eyes were drawn in, but just how he performed that character. Just the sort of comfort, I suppose, in that sort of penultimate moment for him. And it's just, you kind of leave there going, wow. I mean, that he was basically the crowning jewel of the cast, even though he wasn't there for very long. So
it's funny because, like, his character, though his character dies early, he almost becomes the setting itself. Like, somehow Christopher Plummer managed to channel such a beautiful performance that seemed so organic and so simple that when I see the Knives Out chair, I think of Christopher Plummer. Like, he managed to imprint a character on a chair that he never sits in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of fuckery is that?
That's Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, no, like, this man had such a presence that if you hear that Christopher Plummer's in the movie, you may not be actually interested in the movie anyway, but you're still going to go see it just to see what this man would do.
I mean, there are limits to that. I wouldn't say sit through Alexander just to see his Aristotle, but I mean, there's other reasons to watch that as well.
Yeah. And also, you know, like we said, some of his film choices were just, wait, what? Like, he did 2 animated Lovecraft movies.
Lovecraft, this is extraordinary. We stand on a precipice, an entire new world to explore right at our fingertips.
that from the looks of what I'm seeing on IMDb here, two animated Lovecraft movies that were designed for children. Again.
Range.
What?
Range.
He played Dr. West in Howard Lovecraft and the Frozen Kingdom. And Howard Lovecraft and the Undersea Kingdom. Apparently it was some kind of World Kingdom tour. I don't know.
The worst part is I think I haven't even seen this, and I know exactly what oh my god. Those are not for children.
Oh no, I mean, as soon as you say Lovecraft, it immediately what? I think finally, just to wrap up, we have to go full bore on his work as General Chang, who, I'm sorry, was the greatest villain in Star Trek history, not named Khan.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
An argument can be made that he was better than Khan. His motivations are clearer. It's not just a straightforward revenge. He's an active force, not a reactive force.
Yeah. I mean, Chang and Khan are both, I think, the most memorable villains. Khan, I think, has the advantage of having already had Space Seed to set up the character. Whereas with Chang, Plummer is coming in cold.
Mm-hmm. And he has to make that impression right away.
Yeah.
And he did. He definitely did.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he, not only did he, but I've talked in other episodes about just how much I thoroughly enjoy actors when they are absolutely chewing up the scenery. The most fascinating thing with General Chang is he's chewing up the scenery without chewing up the scenery. And it's just so fascinating to watch.
Oh, now be honest, Captain. Warrior to warrior. You do prefer it this way, don't you? As it was meant to be. No peace in our time. Once more unto the breach, dear friends.
It really is, because, yeah, like, he's not taking risks. He's completely enjoying himself as
a
veteran performer. But, like, when he starts spinning in the command chair and shouting Shakespeare...
Cry havoc! And let's slip the dogs of war!
It's like, you're well into this, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, like, that man is 100% having the time of his life.
As he should.
Oh, yeah. And there are also moments where he's acting directly opposite William Shatner's Captain Kirk, where you'd almost think that deep down he's going, back off, Bill, this is my movie.
This may be the your send-off for your Star Trek career, but no, I'm not going to make it easy for you.
It's just the sort of Stratford, you know, competition, the alumnus, you know, versus tonight, place your bets. Obviously, you know, who wins, but.
But I mean, that first meeting between Chang and Kirk in the transporter room, you'd almost swear Chang is hitting on him.
And this is General Chang, my chief of staff.
I have so wanted to meet you, Captain. I'm not sure how to take that.
Sincere admiration, Kirk.
From one warrior to another. Right.
It was a really complicated performance for being maybe 5 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
And that's possibly the richness of him. And you completely see why, like, the reason that he hated Sound of Music is they spent months trying to find a richness in the characters and just concluded that Captain What's-His-Nut is not a very interesting character. Like, everything's very shallow about that character. and you get the feeling that really portraying a character of worth that is merited to his performing abilities was a real badge of pride, and if it didn't work out, shame for him. He hated not having a character he could sink his teeth into.
Which, I mean, that's what we want in characters, to find relatability, to find something within us or that reflects something that's worth keeping our attention, because if it doesn't keep our attention, why should we watch it? So for him, if there's nothing there in the character to find that he can latch onto, then why should he care?
Yeah, no, exactly. Absolutely.
Because it goes both ways.
Yeah, and even just the smaller things, like even just the look of Chang. Chang apparently originally was supposed to have hair.
That's weird.
And yeah, when you hear that, you can't picture General Chang with hair.
No.
And apparently both that baldness and the less severe Klingon makeup was Plummer's idea.
Definitely less time in the chair.
Less time in the chair, but it's also it's both a more distinct look, but it's not like a new Klingon look. It's a throwback almost to the original Klingons. Like his facial hair is far more original Klingon than what you saw later. It's wonderfully unique, and you know that you did something good when the canon has to adjust around you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even just adjusting around him. He set precedence of sorts with Klingon characters. Because his General Chang basically determines how Klingons handle their final defeat in space combat. Because when you see Chang stand up and just watch the view screen as the torpedo comes in and hits his ship, you go to Star Trek Generations, where when Lursa and Bator are finally defeated in that movie, they do the same thing Plummer did in Undiscovered Country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can contrast it to Christopher Lloyd's performance, who had far more on-screen presence than any cinematic Klingon before or after, and it's you know, Lloyd's doing a terrific performance with what he has, but what he has is just essentially a pirate.
Basically, you know, yeah.
There's nothing to him. There's none of that complexity, and interest, and curiosity, and mutual respect, and you know. You're absolutely right. Despite the fact that the honor stuff really came in with Worf in 1987, so we're about 4 years into Klingons being obsessed with honor and stuff, you can see it. Like, it's not just lines. It's a belief that Plummer manages to put on screen, and he couches it in something we can relate to, Shakespeare.
You have not experienced Shakespeare until you have read him in the original Klingon.
Tach, pa, tach, be.
So it becomes not his honor, it's the honor of Falstaff getting shit on by Henry V. You know, it's the more complex villains of Richard III. It's Macbeth agonizing over his decision. You know, it's so much better. Sorry, Christopher Lloyd.
You're really not wrong in anything there. And I could almost see Plummer's agent getting in touch with him and Plummer going, okay, so basically they want to put me under makeup, have me spout a lot of Shakespeare in a foreign language, and the penultimate act of my character, I can just go as crazy as I want to? Sold!
Do the full Montauban. The full Montauban.
Tickle us, do we not laugh? Prick us, do we not bleed? Wrong us, shall we not revenge?
No, that Shakespeare training obviously came into use because, I mean, Shakespeare is so long-lasting, and with that sort of divine training for him, that definitely came across in all roles, whether they were Shakespeare-related or not. He had that humility, humanity, empathy, that feeling that we can all really relate to, because a lot of people, yeah, sure, look at Shakespeare as just being a bunch of old, silly words and whatnot, but he took the essence of that, of what it means to be human, and all of the struggles and joys that come with it, and brought it all across of his performances. And that's definitely something that we will sorely miss. And while, yes, there are other performers out there nowadays that have that training as well, I don't think any will as come as near to such utter perfection, whether the movie's substance or not was, you know, as good as him. But I don't think we'll ever have someone quite like Christopher Plummer again.
Oh, no. We definitely won't, because he was such an old school trained actor who also paid attention to the little things, like the little details, to a degree that I don't think you're going to see a lot of actors or productions really do these days. Like, to go back to that dinner scene in Star Trek VI, when you see the Klingon delegation, like, kind of fumbling with the napkins and the place settings. Plummer is the only one who takes the moment to have General Chang look at the human side, the Starfleet side of the table, see what they're doing, and go, oh, I'm supposed to do this. And then you see him take the napkin out of the ring and so forth. Like, just that little that little bit of detail.
Mm-hmm. It's funny how much, like, menace he has in that. Because it means that he's paying attention. He's an incredibly strategic character, to the point of making sure that he's even watching you do this. What else is he watching you do?
Exactly. And I think I'm going to leave with a recommendation, which is there was a TV series that he did in 2019 called Departure.
Listen, I'm going to be late.
You put me on another flight.
I love you, baby.
There's been an incident. A 950 has disappeared over the Atlantic.
I'm sorry, Howard.
I need you. You're the only one who can find this plane.
Is it strange that there was no mayday of any kind?
It could have been a hijacking.
Somebody on board wanted that aircraft to disappear.
They found debris.
No, a survivor. Is our miracle survivor our prime suspect?
This is an interrogation. What are you accusing me of?
It wasn't an accident.
Terrorist caused this crash.
It could look like an act of war.
The van's following us.
People went to great lengths to cover up what crashed Flight 716. I go where the evidence takes me.
It's not possible.
We need to hear what happened on that flight. We need to get the truth.
I think CBC produced, it might be a CBC, BBC joint venture. While it's not exactly cast with specifically A-list actors, particularly if you're Canadian, you're gonna look through this list and be like, oh, I know that person, I know that person, I know that person, I know that person. Especially for something that's probably a lesser known Canadian production. It looks better than it really has any right to. And it's... Yeah, it's definitely worth at least taking a look at. But unless anybody else has any last thoughts before we call it?
No.
Nope.
Alrighty, well, in that case, depending on when I have this thing cut and posted, you'll either just after this or just before this, we'll see our next full episode, which will, I believe, be Crash and I being joined by Alicia Kronheim to discuss the 2015 web series Haphead. Don't forget to hit those like and subscribe buttons, share this video with your friends, and drop us a line anytime you like.